Welcome to the Big Mike Fun Podcast, where you'll learn about advanced wealth building strategies from real estate investing to creating massive ROI and secure retirement profits. So pour yourself a cup of coffee, grab a notepad, and lean in, because Big Mike has got the mic, starting now.
Welcome to the Big Mike Fun Podcast. I'm the Big Mike, Mike Zlatnik. Today it is my honor, pleasure, and a privilege to welcome Ryan Parson, my good friend, business associate, and a brilliant mind. Hi, Ryan.
Hey there, Mike. Thanks very much for having me on your podcast. I appreciate that.
I greatly appreciate you coming on the podcast. You've been on the podcast before, and thank you for coming this time again.
Glad to do it.
So tell the audience quickly what's new in the world of Ryan. So what's just a couple of quick things. I know you do the RV tour, the money, and I guess, what do you call that tour?
Well, as we sit here towards the early part of the fall here, Mike, we're still on the motorhome and money tour is what we call it. And so it's always a fun thing every year, you know, about living my best life. I love to travel. I love to RV. I love to see our great country. And so I'm actually down here in Dallas, Texas right at the moment for the next couple of weeks and visiting with our members, our Mile Marker Club members down here, visiting with our investors and enjoy beautiful Lake Grapevine. So that's where I'm at the moment and looking forward to finishing that up. And it actually, Mike, as you know, my primary home anyway is in Western Colorado. And I was just received notice there's about an inch and a half of snow at the house. So we got a snowstorm up there tonight. So I'm anxious to get back home here in a couple of weeks and start the great 2019-2020 ski season.
Yeah, that should be a lot of fun. I certainly love the snow and I don't ski down the hill, but it's a lot of fun to watch. So, and yeah, great to hear that you are traveling and I guess traveling is the ultimate way to live. Certainly, this responsibility around your house, but if you can pick up your bags and move, that's makes life a whole lot easier. Anyway, let's talk a little bit about Mile Marker Club and some of the things you do in Mile Marker Club. We covered a little bit last time, but give the audience a little bit of an overview. What are the primary benefits of Mile Marker Club?
Sure. So as you know, Mike, I had the good fortune of, you know, quote unquote, retiring early. I was trapped in corporate America, you know, like, you know, a lot of us do. I mean, when we grow up, you know, we got parents that are telling us, you know, the right things, the right spirited things anyway, you know, study hard, work hard, go to college, get a good job, you know, try to get a pension plan, you know, and all the fringe benefits that come along. And that, you know, that was part of my story of growing up too. And I did have, you know, at least what started off a great corporate American job, but yet my wealth and in part, thanks to the family that I grew up in, my wealth was really more so surrounded around alternative investments, you know, namely real estate related investments, but, you know, private equities, a little bit of venture capital, private debt related deals, but everything usually always somehow, some way trailed back to real estate. And so as time was going on and I was doing my, you know, corporate America career, because I just thought that's what I was supposed to do was, you know, just work and do that. And I was compensated well, but I realized that is not, you know, true wealth necessarily of going, quote unquote, working for someone. And as I was further, you know, just kind of watching my own wealth, albeit very passively grow, particularly with alternative, but even to the extent that I had traditional investments, you know, with my 401k plan, with my employer, something wasn't feeling right. You know, I was watching some of the ups and downs, you know, especially in the 2000s where the traditional stock market, you know, kind of took a tank dive. And then, of course, even again in 2008, and I started running some numbers just in my own portfolio, realizing, you know, if this kind of either happens at the wrong time in my life or the wrong series, I should say, of times, I mean, markets go up and markets go down. We all know that. But how that happens to you within the scope of living your best life or what I was starting to realize, I'm going, you know, I've abdicated, or I, at that point anyway, Mike, I had abdicated way too much control to others, namely Wall Street. And even with my alternative investments, I was realizing I was being a bit too passive. And what I mean by passive, it's not that I wasn't a passive investor then, and I still very largely am today. But what I was missing was the fact that I was not actively managing my own wealth. In other words, it's not that I didn't have property managers managing my property and my rental properties for me in that regard, but I was expecting them. I was expecting my CPA. I was expecting my attorneys to be watching my wealth. And the reality of it is, no one was more interested in my wealth than I am.
So segmenting further, how did it lead you to Mile Marker Club? I guess it, the natural progression is the Mile Marker Club. And what is Mile Marker Club? Just trying, the story is great. It drove you to start Mile Marker Club. Now tell, what is the Mile Marker Club? What services it renders?
Absolutely. So with that backdrop, I realized, Mike, that there were other high net worth families like mine and other high net worth investors, you know, like I am, that were needing more of that support when it came to true wealth management and wealth strategy. Because the traditional advisory services, the traditional wealth managers do not have a tolerance and or understanding for alternative investments, real estate and otherwise. And part of where I came to know just for my own wealth is that I needed that wealth organization piece. I needed to truly know where all of my wealth was, how it was structured, what it was invested in, and then things like tax basis and really what were my goals with my wealth. I mean, I was just chugging along saving, but I had no real purpose with my wealth because no one understood the alternative investments that they were in. No one could really help me with that. And so part of what Mile Marker Club, why I brought that, you know, to the marketplace so many years ago, Mike, was to not only help our Mile Marker Club members truly define and articulate what does wealth mean to them in terms of living their best lives? You know, I get to enjoy this idea of motorhome, or not idea, but motorhoming. It's a big deal for me. I love to travel. And, you know, it takes money to do that. But that's part of my best life. And once I finally was able to more articulate that, it wasn't about, well, can I afford this? But, oh, this is what I want to do. This is part of my life's work. This is part of my life's mission. How now am I going to afford it? When you have alternative investments, you need to be able to look very critically and analytically at the future cash flows of the deal. And part of Mile Marker Club of what we do with help our members organize where you're at right now. And it's not just an elementary exercise, Mike. It is really an exercise of falling in love with your wealth all over again, and falling in love again with your whys, and realizing I can do this. And so before most people, especially in the traditional financial planning world, but even investors that are, you know, relatively heavily into alts, they hear a new strategy, Mike, they, you know, go to a seminar or, you know, talking with one of their buddies about, oh, I'm doing this, I'm doing that. And fundamentally, those individual deals or those individual strategies or those individual cool things aren't wrong in their own right. It's just, if you don't understand the baseline of your own wealth, how your wealth arrived to where it's at when you're contemplating that new decision, you don't really know how to truly integrate that. And when you're really well organized and you're reconnected back with your wealth, it helps you make better wealth decisions for yourself, because at the end of the day, no one else is going to do it for you. So that's what we bring forward in Mile Marker Club, those tools, those strategies to allow our members to truly be their own wealth advisors and ultimately to be able to go live their best lives.
That is certainly a critical part of one's wealth management, right? Just to get back to the basics of why you're doing this and managing your own goals. So if you don't know where you're going, how are you going to get there, right? So let's talk a little bit about I guess, portfolio or investment goals? Because you just mentioned, hey, deals come across the desk, and these deals could fit or not. And if you don't have overall strategy, you don't know whether a given deal is good for you or not, even though it may be good for somebody else. So let's talk a little bit about individual portfolio strategy goals. So let's cover the basics. Let me just start mention a few, and then maybe you can comment on some of these key goals. So I believe the following list of goals, and maybe you can comment on a few of them, are critical. Obviously, your own risk-reward tolerance. I think that's probably number one. If people are not comfortable with risky stuff, they can't sleep at night, then they should stay away. But you mentioned some of the cash flow goals, so you could have the freedom. If you have the cash flow, you could travel, you can enjoy your life. And then there is a total return goals. Cash flow and total return don't always not always the same. At times, cash flow is part of the total return. Then tax efficiency, diversification, time horizon, liquidity. Can you talk a little bit about these things and what do you do within the club to help folks with their at least initial goals building, and then that helps them to build a portfolio or something that meets their objectives. I'm sure objectives are different. Somebody who is retired is very different than somebody who's making a lot of money today being still active in whatever practice they have. So I'd love to hear your thoughts on this.
Absolutely. So, you know, for our Mile Marker Club members, Mike, you know, they have largely come to us and they're already high net worth. They either got there through, you know, most of them are either corporate America executives like I was, or they run some sort of small to medium sized business and have built that up in their own right. And have, you know, just been kind of following a traditional type of plan. And so where, particularly as it relates to alternative investments, when our members, you know, come to us or find us, they're realizing that something about their wealth is starting to feel off. They don't have anything mathematically telling them that. They don't have, you know, some big red flag out there. But from our members who have just always been successful with their careers and their families, you know, a lot of that starts off with a gut feeling that is something is telling you something isn't right here.
Okay.
And so it really starts from there. And once they get past that or realize and start to take even some basic action on that, well, what do I do now either to go further into alternatives, or I realize, look, I can't abdicate all my wealth to Wall Street to manage for me. I got to start to do something different. And for most investors, Mike, when they get into alternatives, it's usually real estate related, something real estate related, buying a rental property, maybe getting involved into some sort of a syndication like a multifamily apartment complex or something like that. That's usually how investors get involved with that. And they get involved because they just heard about something, or their golfing buddy or their, you know, business associate or somebody that they respect brought them the deal. And they look at that and go, okay, well, that seems like a good deal and he's doing it or she's doing it. You know, let me go into it. And the deal may be perfectly fine, but when you're trying to scale your wealth to your objectives and your whys, you have to have what we call a family investment policy that very clearly articulates those things that you brought up. How much cash flow do I need right now? Do I really need any cash flow? What really is my time horizon, or what we call holding period requirements? So, you know, if you're what, and there's a lot of other things that go in. How much debt exposure should I have? And I'm not talking how much debt do you have as an investor. I'm talking about, do you invest in debt instruments versus equity instruments, or some combination thereof? And a lot of times, Mike, you know, investors, they go in and do whatever deal they do. And when we ask that question, well, are you in the debt part of the capital stack or the equity part of the capital stack, or maybe both, depending on what the deal is, they can't give me a clear answer on that. And that's not abnormal, but that's part of what is just one of those dials of going in to help determine your overall risk comfort. Do you like more debt-related deals or equity-related deals? And realizing that so many deals today that come across your desk, Mike, that come across my desk, sometimes it's really hard for the novice alternative investor to even determine what it is, let alone understand what does their own portfolio need, more debt, more equity, or kind of what percentage seems to make the most sense with respect to that decision one has to make when you're getting involved with alternatives.
Right, that's a fascinating point. I have to say that what you just said is so astounding or astonishing that people invest and they don't even know what they invest into, right? So we talked about this whole theory of investment quadrants that I like to advocate. And a lot of investors, it sounds to me, if there's a drastic difference if you invest in the same deal, but you're in a debt, first lien debt portion of a deal, or leveraged equity. The risk profile is very different and rewards have to be accordingly adjusted. But what's so fascinating is the fact that people don't understand. And I think the first step, like you mentioned, if their family investment policy, and if at least they have an idea what they're trying to invest into, maybe the deal could fall into. But what's amazing is that the too many people just don't have an idea and they need education to help them select from the real estate is a very powerful asset class. It has so many benefits. But if you don't understand the risk level of a given deal, and you can't really compute risk-adjusted return. You can't compute whether you're taking too much risk or getting compensated for the risk that you're taking. So, what are your thoughts? Again, you're very well familiar with the investment quadrants, but I'm just curious. What do you do within the Mile Marker Club with individual folks to help them build the portfolio that kind of makes them feel good. When, as you mentioned, they come to you with something doesn't feel right, right? They just made a whole bunch of investments and they have no idea what they just built. And I'm not saying they're all bad by themselves, but it doesn't seem to fit. So just some more thoughts on this, helping folks at least get a pretty clear picture on what they got. I think that's step number one. Probably before they can adjust, they got to know what they got.
That's exactly right, Mike. And that's exactly what we call at Mile Marker Club, wealth organization. And that really is a function of education and knowledge. Because especially if you've been doing any sort of alternatives to this point, there's no one else that can interpret and really remembers what the deal was other than you when you went to do it. And so if you don't have then the appropriate analytics of that deal built into what, like you said, how much of it is cash flowing? Is it a growth deal? Is it what's your tax basis potentially into the deal? Are you in direct ownership of the deal? Are you through a syndication or like a private placement Reg D fund? You know, all of those components bring a different level of risk reward to your overall portfolio. And so it really starts with that education. And, you know, part of what, you know, and I just, everything that we do here at Mile Marker Club, Mike, was largely born out of my own frustrations with understanding wealth strategy and wealth management about alts that the traditional financial planners and the traditional advisors could not help with. And so, you know, for us, that really starts with, you know, just even our regular training calls that we have with our members that, you know, are constantly on there and we're talking about these very issues like we're talking about here on podcasts and all trying to help each other understand these too. You know, our Mile Marker Club symposiums that we hold, you know, every 3 to 4 months throughout the year to physically bring us all together because, you know, in this world of technology, Mike, which is great, you know, doing a podcast like this or doing video calls, you know, there's still, and we were just talking about this in our internal team meeting with our staff here at Mile Marker Club today that are scattered all over the country, as you know. There is something that is added when you're physically face to face. There's something more that still comes along when you're physically together than the virtual environment. And, you know, so that's why we still do those types of events that are, you know, very private, by the way, of, you know, it's only high net worth investors. It's only our Mile Marker Club members and invited guests because in this go-go market like we are with real estate, when you're trying to learn and you're trying to always educate yourself, and by the way, part of one of my mantras, Mike, and you know this about me as long as you and I have known each other, school is never out of session when it comes to your wealth. If you're not continuously learning, continuously trying to understand and get better, not to mention all the tax law changes that are constantly changes, estate planning law changes, just to name a few, market conditions, you're going to lose your wealth. And that's why 96% of Americans aren't millionaires. You know, only really 4 to 6% of U.S. citizens are that make that accredited investor standpoint, Mike. And that's a big reason, because people just don't keep up with it. And so those symposiums do that. And, you know, that's just how we start with the wealth, or, you know, organization is just trying to keep learning together and creating those environments to do that, on top of, you know, what we do then with the last thing I'll kind of say about this education piece, Mike, you know, for what we've learned, you know, over the years of working with high net worth families is that, you know, when you're ready to kind of step it up and go deeper, and you need more of that kind of one-on-one, that hand-holding to do that, and that coaching, you can only bite off one or two financial projects a year. In other words, if you say, oh my gosh, okay, I want to get our debt optimized, I want to get a tax optimization strategy in place, I want to get a family investment policy in place, I want to understand our cash flow analytics, I want to, you know, figure out a way to sell my business. And, you know, if you try to take on too many of these projects in a year, Mike, I have found nothing gets done.
So let me jump in and comment on a couple of things. So first of all, I agree with you. They say preach a lot of change one thing at a time. Otherwise, you can't measure. There's very few people are able to change many variables at the same time and get desired outcome. Usually, they just get confused and it gets even more complicated. So one change at a time. The other quick comment I have is I've been to your symposium events and they're phenomenal. So I have to give you and your team a lot of credit for putting together outstanding events. And it certainly helps to break some bread with people, have one-on-one conversations. And it's you usually put them together in great locations. And it's a lot of fun to actually go there and spend some time with very bright and talented people. So it's a great benefit that the club provides. And these symposiums are absolutely very, very, very valuable. The third quick comment that I wanted to make is that you're absolutely right. People need to learn together. And what's really interesting and fascinating is I have this phrase that I'm going to use. And the bottom line is the answer is both. But are you investing to learn or learning to invest? And most people, when they invest and they make mistake, what do they get out of it, right? They get out of learning experience, as they say. So a lot of investments that don't pan out, it's an exercise of learning how to invest better. The reverse is true too. So when you are learning, you're learning to invest, you're trying to go through your past mistakes and past mistakes of other people and learn from them and do better next time. So it's a perpetual cycle, investing to learn and learning to invest. Anyway, sorry, you wanted to add some comments and I jumped in.
Well, no, you're absolutely right. And I think about, you know, when you mentioned a moment ago, Mike, with the quadrants, you know, as you've developed them and, you know, even helped teach me and helped teach our members about that and have been so gracious to do that, as I know you are with all of your investors, you know, because the smarter, the better, the more proficient all of us are, the more effective we are to help each other. Because we've talked about this a lot before, Mike, it's lonely at the top. You usually hear that within the context of running businesses, but the same is true with our wealth. You know, the wealthier we are, when you eclipse that $1 million of net worth, which I know doesn't seem to sound like a lot of money in this day and age, but the reality of it is very few people actually ever get there. And so once you get there and then you hit the 2 million and the 3 and the 5 and the 10 or whatever your aspirations are, it gets really lonely at the top. And it's not like you can open up a magazine or turn on the TV or, you know, you go down the street and your neighbors are all in the same position, because they're not. you know, for most of us. And so being able to be around others that have, you know, created their wealth in their own right, and have like you just said, you know, maybe made some mistakes, and you go, okay, well, I learned from them, but I got to learn from other people's mistakes too. It's really hard to, you know, find other like-minded and then just really good people. And I that's one of the things, you know, again, I struggled with myself, was trying to really efficiently find that. So hence why I had to go create it anyway. And with the help of a lot of great people, you included, Mike, to help bring that off the ground, because this idea of, you know, building these and understanding the quadrants, building these strategies, cash flow, returns, and all that, it's not a one size fits all approach. Right. Traditional financial planning is all about one size fits all. And the reality of it is, because, you know, if you've amassed this multi-million dollars of net worth, you didn't get there, however you got there, you didn't get there by following a one-size-fits-all approach. And so, because ultimately at the end of the day, no one is responsible for our wealth except us. No one's going to manage it. No one's going to oversee it really the best, unless you're doing it. And as a result of that, you have to build this investment policy. You have to build this risk management policy and then constantly be changing it and updating it. And I don't mean to say constantly like it's a day-to-day thing, but it's a regular thing, because otherwise, if you aren't doing it regularly, Mike, and, you know, talking about it and seeing the numbers kind of unfold before they unfold, so to speak, kind of being able to look forward and project, you're going to miss it. You're going to miss something, because the market is going to change, something in your life is going to change, and it's going to throw you off course if you're not constantly being proactive with it. One of the things that I'll say to that, and, you know, you and I as fund managers, you know, with our own respective funds, Mike, you know, constantly are talking about it, is this idea of an investment fluctuation reserve. You know, in the fund management world, we talk about it in loss reserves. Another way to say that is investment fluctuation reserves. And that's one of the big things that I see, you know, with really high net worth families, is that they're doing well with their investments, even if they're in traditionals, which is perfectly fine. I'm asset agnostic. It doesn't bother me, you know, with just whatever anyone wants to invest in, is that their prerogative, and that's fine. Especially with traditionals and then alternatives, if you haven't built into your own portfolio that investment fluctuation reserve, that is a big reason how wealth gets lost. Because the reality of it is, Mike, traditional investments, alternative investments, whatever your mix of them is, a deal is going to go south on you for whatever reason from time to time, or some deals, you know, in your investing life cycle are going to go south, you know, and it's not because you picked a bad deal. It's just whatever happened, it happened. And so if you don't have that built into your investment policy, into your overall investment strategy, you're going to get behind the eight ball somehow with your wealth. In other words, you got to go into this with eyes wide open, realizing something's going to go wrong. And the best way to manage that is just to anticipate it and build it into your financials going forward. And that's a big component that, you know, high net worth investors, as I define them, Mike, kind of this $2 to $20 million net worth investor, it's a common thing that's missed. And so that, you know, as investors start to add that component back, it really helps, you know, like within the spirit of these quadrants go, you know what, I'm okay with maybe taking on a quadrant three or a quadrant four deal. I've got capital to do that, because those are more growth deals. They're higher risk deal, but they're growth. My wealth needs some growth. I'm willing to do that. And I'm also understand the risk that it might not come and go, or might not, you know, pan out exactly the way, but I've got this cushion built and I'm okay with that. And, you know, along the way we can go.
Yeah, that's a very powerful point. I agree with you wholeheartedly. You're calling investment fluctuation reserves on a fund level, it's just loss reserves. And generally speaking, whether you're managing a personal portfolio or a fund investment portfolio, the exercise is almost identical.
That's right.
I agree. Every investment needs some kind of a loss reserve. And the loss reserves kind of capture it mathematically. And the bottom line, when you invest in a fund, the fund takes care of it for you. The fund manages the reserves. Hopefully, the fund manages a good fund. If you invest individually, you got to have that. You got to have, like we talked about this, portfolio level reserves and individual deal reserves. And if you set your expectations conservatively, including the reserves in the computation, then you're not going to get disappointed or unlikely to be disappointed if things don't go well. And if things go better than expected, great. I mean, that's a good problem to have. So that those are phenomenal points. Very, very quickly, just a couple more questions, and we're kind of running out of time, but I do want to ask a question. We heard this today. This question was raised, and I kind of love the question. People talking about infinite return, and it happens with some deals. Some sponsors promote it, and it is misleading or confusing verbiage. It sounds wonderful, but what is it? What is an infinite return in your understanding? How does it happen, and any thoughts and comments on it?
Sure. So when you see deals floating around out there, primarily the alternative investment space is where you see it at. It's a marketing philosophy. It's an advertising mechanism, Mike, to get investors to get interested in whatever the deal sponsor happens to be pushing. That's what it boils down to. You know, a great fund manager like you, you know, even if you're a fund or you're doing a one-off deal, you would never say that it's to the marketplace at large. Oh, infinite returns. You know, I would never say anything like that. So first of all, you tend to see those deals when you've got a more of a novice or unsophisticated or inexperienced deal sponsor, has been my experience with that. And what it has to do with is when you go and do a deal, let's just take an example, like a multifamily apartment complex, and the deal sponsor is out there trying to raise capital to buy this apartment complex. And they say you're going to get an infinite return because in the early years, they're going to be maybe rehabbing the property, then getting it leased back up and trying to get it stabilized in the hopes of increasing the value of that property that they can then go and get a bank loan somehow, Fannie, Community Bank, whatever the case might be, wherever they get it, and then ultimately pay off all the investors, at least their full principal that they had into the deal. If you made a $100,000 investment, you get your $100,000 back, and presumably some sort of a rate of return, a pref rate, an equity, some sort of a rate of return. And then in theory, you have zero basis in the deal. And then as the property continues to perform and you get your quarterly distribution check or however often the deal does it, you know, when you have zero basis in the deal and you're still getting a return, that's where the idea of infinite comes from.
So that's great point. Let me just comment on this. And then I know you had another great point. What happens? How do you exit the deal? Which is, we'll talk about this in a minute. But just to reinforce the point, what you're left with is a common equity. If you got back your principal and say preferred equity, what you're left with is a common equity. My comment on this is that the return can be computed for the time the money is in the deal. What you're left with is portion of the return that you didn't take out upon refinancing. So if you think about it, say you put $100,000 into a deal, and the deal upon refinancing got you back your $100,000 and 8% preferred return after 3 years. So you got $124,000 after 3 years. So in theory, you had 8% return, and then you have a portion of the common equity left. And that common equity can actually be quantified. If upon refinancing, the common equity is worth another $30,000 at your portion of the deal, then it's another 10% a year. So actual return for the time the money was in was 18%. It's really not infinite, but it is a little bit of a marketing, it's a clever marketing ploy to make it look like it's infinite. It's never infinite. It's just a portion of your return didn't get returned back to you, but was left in a deal. But it certainly sounds exciting. Now, you brought up a point in our private discussion that the big question becomes, upon a refinancing of a property like this, you get your money back and your preferred return, but you're left as a common equity investor. When and how do you exit? That was any thoughts on this subject?
Absolutely. So going back to some of our earlier conversations, Mike, about the kind of this family investment policy, as I call it, part of the structuring your wealth, you've got to be able to know what you need your wealth to do for you at future dates. And so part of that, you know, and that may be, you know, giving to charity or, you know, how you want to transcend your wealth to generations below you. I mean, there's a whole, that's a whole nother conversation. But the point is then you have to back that up to investments you're doing today to allow your, to make sure you have your wealth position to do what you want it to do for you in the future. And so a big part of looking at really any deal, traditionals included, but especially alternatives, because there's not a liquid or public market to trade your alternative investments is when will you be done in the deal? So even in this concept, this infinite return type thing that you're bringing up, even though you may get your investment principal back, if you're in that deal with no defined end date or at least identified end date, you're constantly getting a K-1 every year. You're constantly having to oversee that asset in your portfolio year after year, making sure you're getting your checks, wondering how the deal is doing, having your regular calls with your deal sponsor, all of those things. And you may say to yourself, you know what? I don't want to do that in an infinitum here. In other words, part of your investment policy says something like, I want to be fully out of a deal within 3 years, within 5 years, or 10 years, or whatever, have some clearly defined exit out of there. Because yes, the cash flow may be good, but your wealth, that's just one part of your wealth. And if you don't have defined end dates, or more importantly, when you're conducting your underwriting and due diligence on a deal, if the deal sponsor cannot give you confidently what their exit strategy is, and it's just, oh, this is a really good deal, we just got to go do it, that's one of the biggest red flags, you know, I look at and see, because this is about the life cycle of a deal, not just an in-the-moment part of the deal. So this idea of infinite returns, while it looks good on paper and it sounds, it's got some sizzle to it, Mike, just because it has that doesn't mean it's a good thing for your wealth, because you've got so many other components to be thinking about other than just that issue.
So great points. Just a couple of quick comments on this. Really, really good points. One, obviously, every deal's got to have an exit strategy, even though it's a refi, but is there a lifetime at some point the exit? Maybe refi 3 years later and sell 6 years later. Certainly be helpful. The other quick point is, just for folks to consider, when you invest in syndication, you should always compare it to investing in a fund like yours, like a multi-sector fund, a Heritage Multi-Sector or Tampa Opportunity Fund, that are open-ended funds that provide that exit capability through redemption of units in a finite timeline, even though not all investments exit in that timeline. So just one of the side benefits, just kind of realize this. Any other final thoughts or comments? We're running out of time. What's a good way for folks to reach out to you? Say they're interested in Mile Marker Club, your services. Is there a good website? How do they get a little bit more information?
Sure. Well, again, I appreciate the opportunity just to talk about this with your members and your investors today, Mike. I think reaching out to our website is a good place to start, MileMarkerClub.com. Again, MileMarkerClub.com. We've got a lot of just information out there in terms of what we do and how we do it. And if someone's interested, they can kind of start to work from there and to see how to further get involved with us. Is a great place. And you can also see our upcoming Mile Marker Club symposiums out there on the website as well.
Yeah, I appreciate sharing. I've certainly built a symposium, and I think it's a great place to go. If you can come to visit one of these events, get some introduction, I think it's a great way to potentially get started. Anyway, Ryan, I greatly appreciate your wisdom and your sharing, and we're out of time. All good things must come to an end. This was a great recording, but we're out of time. So I very much appreciate your time and your wisdom.
Thank you so much. Until next time.
I would love to have you as a guest again.
Thank you so much for having me, Mike. It's always a pleasure.
Thank you for listening to the Big Mike Fund Podcast. To receive your copy of Mike's How to Choose a Smart Real Estate Fund book, head to BigMikeFund.com or visit Amazon and type Mike Zlotnick. Keep listening and keep investing Big Mike style. See you on the next episode.